hello, hello, and welcome to the My Empty Hand podcast. I am Reggie Darden, and today I'm going to be chatting with Sean Kelly. Always excited to talk to everybody, but certainly with a great guest like Mr. Kelly, we can have a nice chat about his journey and Kenpo and whatever else we decide to chit chat about. Just to kind of give my little background here, I started in Kenpo in the mid 90s. I've also done some training in Taekwondo, Hapkido, and boxing, and I've also been involved in Capoeira. Been doing that for a long time. I'm now currently training at an American Kenpo school, and just recently got my green belt as of this recording. So just really loving the journey, really enjoying just all the great things that are coming along. And now that I got this podcast started, just being able to talk with, you know, not only the kind of the usual suspects that you would expect on a Kenpo podcast, but just all the other people that, you know, maybe not necessarily get to tell their story. So I feel that we all have a story to tell and to share. And just as we learn from our teachers, the teachers learn from us. So I'm just really, really fortunate that we've had such a great response with the podcast, and just looking forward to hearing more stories and learning and growing together. So with our esteemed guests here, what I would like to know and what our listeners would like to know is, how did you get started in martial arts and in Kenpo? How did Kenpo find you, and how did that all start for you?
Well, first of all, thank you for having this opportunity to come on your podcast project. Two things. Number one, congratulations on your green belt. And please give my best and a huge salute to my good friend, old friend, Master Bill Piper. I haven't spoken to him for quite a while, but there's been times we'll kind of catch each other on the social media aspect and just stay in touch that way. But more importantly, first of all, thank you for being a part of our future. We need communications like this. We need documented history and stories and connection, and let it be the distance apart from your location where you're at in Texas to mine here in South Florida to across the world. And every opportunity I tell people, if they get the opportunity to, you know, meet and greet people, and it doesn't have to be specifically just for Kenpo, it can actually be in any style or system, I think we automatically have a camaraderie just by the culture of being involved with the martial arts. As far as my history goes, it seems like every time I turn around and I do a background on myself, I'm older and older each time. It's definitely a journey, fond, remarkable experience. But more importantly, you know, remaining to be humble enough to say I'm still learning. I'm still under construction. I can learn from anyone. And what I do have, and with the knowledge I've obtained, I love to share it. That's one of the things I find myself gifted, is a passion to share and communicate. And I actually became a certified Maxwell Leadership Coach under the well-known Dr. John C. Maxwell background and what he's known for. But I found that to be an essential tool addition to my toolbox of knowledge by being able to now share, hopefully, with whatever the audience may be that invites me to have this opportunity, either through social media outlets or even at live events, which is my preferred, because I love just to be in the company and being in the room with others. My martial arts background started probably in interest around the Bruce Lee era, early 70s, of course. And my first lesson literally started in Okinawan Kenpo from a guy by the name of George Dillman, who was out of Pennsylvania that time in 1975, it was. I was only there for about a little over a year, maybe. It just wasn't what I was looking for, and it was a distance and travel. Actually, what happened is my dad had an office like two doors down from George Dillman's school in Reading, Pennsylvania. And so like around the age of 12 is when I kind of like found my way there as a young teenager. And, you know, like anybody else at that time and place, you know, we're trying to find, you know, what is it you want to do? And I had a circumstance, my first circumstance at 5 years old, you know, dealing with bullying. And then, you know, I just became a real big advocate toward a lot of reading in the martial arts library of knowledge. And I just wanted to pursue it. That was my thing to do and go and pursue. And I did just that. So my first day a year, I'll go back to that with George Stillman. My instructor was an ex-Marine by the name of Jack McGuire. I had some of his black belts, Mr. Dillman's, even his former wife, Kim, was an instructor of mine. And then Ed Harper was another one. So I had like four or five, and I took private lessons, you know, to start. So I invested in that way of training at first. But I got to say it was a gentleman by the name of Francisco Conde, who's very well known, especially on the East Coast. And he's a guy who kind of broke the racial tension that occurred back in the 60s. And ironically, and I just posted something that was sent to me about his background that was done through some kind of interview of who he was and how he, being born in Manila, Philippines, but also through his military background and travels through the military, encountered meeting different martial arts styles and systems and master instructors. And between his background in the armed forces through the judo background, Kojin Kempo, Matsumura Shorinryu, and then living and staying in Hawaii for a period of time, living with the Imbarados, is how we met Ed Parker, which he's always considered his senior to the martial arts. And they built a relationship. And actually, Mr. Parker and Mr. Conde became very close, longtime friends. And he's actually mentioned in Ed Parker's nunchuck book. And he created through a thesis, which was one of the requirements way back then. He invented what was called the kanchuka. And the name Khan obviously comes from his back name, Conde. Mm-hmm. Well, that was my start in the martial arts, was through his Oriental Defensive Arts Association. He was well-schooled in five different systems, Muay Thai being one of them, like I mentioned. Kempo, he used a lot of the Ed Parker Kempo principles in his teaching. And it was in 1978, I met Ed Parker as a young boy. I always tell people, man, talk about being at the right place at the right time. And ironically, I was a big Elvis fan too, since a kid. And at that logo, that patch that was on the guitar, and then being a Bruce Lee collector of magazines, I noticed Dannon and Santo wearing the patch. So I found in my reading, like every time I turn around, somebody was wearing that patch. And it had to be cool if Elvis is doing it, you know?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And when I really encountered meeting Ed Parker on a personal basis, number one, he was the fastest individual I ever saw in front of me. I mean, he was not... But on the other side, on the other spectrum, he was the most remarkable human being, not only with humor, but how he can, his presence in a room, you felt, no matter how big the room is or whatever the population was, you knew he was there. He held that presence quite well. More importantly, he was a networker. That was one of the things I learned from him and Master Conde, was how to network. And what I mean by that is learn how to, you know, do business and meet people and change ideas. And I still do it today, and created that learning. And see, I was working for Mr. Conde for many, many years. Matter of fact, I was one of his last black belts to work for him. And it was through those channels that I had the opportunity to further my journey. When I moved to Florida, I really wanted to pursue the Kempo system. Matter of fact, on my black belt test, which is one of those days back in my time, you never knew when you're going to be tested. It just happened. Hmm. Well, I was under a car changing oil, because we also owned a used car dealership. It was called Pep Auto Sales. It was like 7 o'clock at night, and I'm under changing oil, and the phone rang, and I picked it up, and it was Mr. Conde, and he said, "Sean, go get your uniform and meet me at the school." And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, it's late. So I just thought someone didn't show up to teach the class. I drove all the way home, which was like the next town over, got it, and came all the way down to the city of Lancaster, walked up the big steps, I opened the door, and over to my left, I see this long table and a bunch of people out on the floor warming up and doing exercises and stuff that I thought. So I had my uniform over my shoulder, walked up to Mr. Conde, and there's Ed Parker. Ed Parker, East Conde, and Mr. Conde. Yeah, and Ed Parker. There's the three of them. And I said, "Yes, sir, what is it that you need me to do?" He goes, "Go get your uniform, get on the floor." For 3 hours, it was fight for survival. And he was just blown away by our performance. And the reason I can say it in that content was when he got up, he said, "You guys are phenomenal." And he mentioned about he thought it was a good idea if we considered going to the internationals because of our fear. And he actually wrote me a letter, a personal letter later on, which is really the golden testimony. And I never thought he would remember me, but he said, "You know, for my size, that he remembered my ferociousness."
Very nice.
Which meant for a small statue guy, you know, I had some speed behind me because I needed it for, mm-hmm. you know, for what I was dealing with. But that was just the way he was. He would remember incidents and in circumstance. And he was always, he'd meet you one time and he'd remember the occasion and your name.
That's huge.
Yeah, there's all kinds of Ed Parker stories. But the one I know of is that I wish I had him. And see, we didn't do that then. We didn't have the prearranged your certificates done. Mm-hmm. That came later, as a matter of fact. So, you know, of course, he never signed my first degree black belt. And I don't think it's really a big deal, but I think the letter that he gave me because of him being there and what he saw was testimony enough to acknowledge a relationship that went from that day forward. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to learn what he was doing beyond the point of what Mr. Conde was doing with us. And obviously, Mr. Conde kept his relationship with him since his, you know, coming out of the military in the 70s. And, you know, it was that, and this is another point to make, that Ed Parker, he mixed his company with a lot of people. And that's what made him so diverse and talented. And he was good at that. In other words, he would find out what your strengths are and then create counters for those moves.
That's the way to do it.
Yep. And so,
just to make sure that I was that I'm clear here, that test you were testing with others as well, or was
there was about 15 of us.
Okay, and this was for your first degree.
It was for my first degree, and what made it bad for me was that I was part of a kickboxing team, so it was our whole team that was on the floor. But some of those guys were going for third degree, fourth degree, whatever. Mm-hmm. But to me, it was just a fight for survival. See, by the way, we didn't wear protective gear. It was. Wrap up your knuckles and go for broke.
Ooh, yeah,
and it was a mass attack. So, I mean, you literally are just fighting for survival.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So, and then Mr. Conde, he was teaching, you know, you mentioned that he did other styles. Was, you know, what he was teaching, he just, you know, labeled that as Kempo or...
No, actually, Mr. Conde had an organization called the Oriental Defensive Arts Association. And what happened is because of a lot of fragmentation and prejudiceness that happened in the 60s, early 70s, there was a point in time where a lot of African-Americans and other groups, they weren't allowed to even go to tournaments because of the prejudiceness. Well, Master Conde, being from the Philippines, I mean, he was a POW, number one, and came from a Spanish background. So he understood racial tension. But when he was training in the military, let it be with the Japanese or the Koreans, he obtained high rank and status from the master instructors of those systems. So what he did is he created his own umbrella system, which had principles of Ed Parker's principles in teaching, some of the Muay Thai, which is Tang Soo Do Muay Thai, judo background, Filipino Arnis, and some of the Kyokushinkai, matter of fact, some of the katas that they did. You know, we trained also as a kickboxing on the East Coast League. And so it was a pretty much anything that worked mm-hmm. based on the tactics of street survival. That's what Mr. Conde did and taught. Obviously, being in the relationship with Mr. Parker, he took a lot of what he did with his principles and brought them into his own system and style and organization. So it was kind of like a smorgasbord umbrella. See, back in the days, earlier days, there was only a few organizations even in the world. So to get status or even to be allowed even in some cases to compete at a tournament, you had to belong to a notable organization or they wouldn't even allow you in.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Understood. So kind of going back a little bit, I'm always curious, you know, in these sorts of interviews and whatnot, everyone kind of focuses on the black belt side of things, but I'm curious if you have any kind of memorable stories from before you were a black belt, you know, when your colored belt was any.
Actually, I have a many. I put it that way, not to sit there and catch my breath here. But what was funny is my first tournament was in 1976, and it was George Dillman who had it. And the division I was in was the men's, believe it or not, was the white belt division, yellow belt division. But what happened was there wasn't a lot of members. And so I ended up having to go against, at that time, a black belt. I put a hole in this guy's tongue because I kicked him and they disqualified me. That was my first experience at a tournament. I got third place. That was a big deal because I competed. My teacher at that time, Jack McGuire, was happy that I was his protege. It was at the Hamburg Fieldhouse, and it was a well-known tournament that George Dillman was known to have on an annual basis. But we would fight in those tournaments, anybody and everybody, no matter what system or style. And they would come from New Jersey, New York, Delaware, Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, probably about six or seven different states, and they would all compete, you know, where they could when they knew about a tournament coming in, you know. So what I'm getting at is they weren't broken down when I started by white belt, yellow belt, and then middle divisions. In this case, there wasn't enough people for the division to separate by belt. I ended up going up at another time against a black belt, and come to find out was one of Master Condi's black belts before I joined the school that beat me. So you learn many lessons, and that was my first. And I think every tournament I ever went to, I learned a lesson. Win or lose, you always learn a lesson. Mm-hmm. But my most memorable time was at blue and green belt. I was going to tournaments every month to the point I was taking first place all the time throughout the whole area because of my consistency. And this is a true story. I didn't want to even compete anymore. It got to the point where it was boring to me because I was winning. Mm-hmm. Not to be boasting, but you know, you get good at your game, and that's what happens. To the point Denise Condi had mentioned something to Mr. Condi and said, Sean doesn't want to go to the tournament this weekend because he's not challenged. So that's how I got my brown belt.
Very nice.
That's how I got my brown belt. But green and blue was my most fun division where you're at. Mm-hmm. To me, it's in the middle. You're at the season of your athleticism. You're eager. You got courage and confidence starting to happen. You're trying to explore your best game. I always actually, quite honestly, going to the tournaments is the camaraderie was the part I found to be the most fun. Mm-hmm. Seeing the friends I made from wherever their schools were from and whatever areas that they're from. And there are times when we would lose or win and we say, hey, you beat me by one. Good going. I'll catch you next time.
Yeah, I wish that I would have maybe stuck a little bit more with doing the tournaments in that. I mean, I went to a bunch as a spectator, but I, you know, you could probably count on one hand how many I actually competed in. And the story with a lot of Kempo folks, you know, I remember getting disqualified.
I mean, what happens in that sport is because of just the adrenaline rush. And you don't know if someone that you're up against is just carrying an attitude because, you know, the testosterone's going and nobody wants to lose. Mm-hmm. To me, there's a lesson. To me, I learned a big lesson. I went from point karate to kickboxing. So it took me to another level and I wanted to do that. So I went from the point karate that I did, a lot. And I mean, hundreds of tournaments. And because I was also working with Mr. Condi as part of his administration, as part of the promoting part, I was working behind the scenes with the trophy part of it, you know, delivering setup, takedown, all that kind of stuff. But more importantly, to me, I just learned a lot. There was so many lessons I learned from just that aspect of the martial arts. So I tell people any chance you get, you know, just go for the experience. Don't go for the trophy. Just go for the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. Now, when you were competing, it was just in sparring? Was there, you know, forms or anything?
I did
like
not.
That?
I was never a forms guy. I just didn't have the discipline. I was too amped up. I was just an Irish dynamite of just let's get it on. And fighting was my thing. And in that time era, everybody, you know, most schools were all fighting schools. You know, I mean, there's even a point in time, I'm sure you're learning, that a lot of the Kempo schools didn't even do forms. Mm-hmm. You know, they're concentrating on freestyle or self-defense techniques. And, you know, some of the school, I never did the Tracy stuff. I mean, I've been around it. But more importantly, when I got into the Kempo directly, it was under Ed Parker's tutelage. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I started on the East Coast with people like Joe Palanzo, trained with Lee Wedleg, Huck Palanis. I started promoting events here in South Florida. So I, if you've ever seen the books, The Journey, and the second one, The International, you'll see all kinds of information where they did interviews on a few of us. And I put everything I could to exploit my gratitude and just the time and era of working with some of the best in the world. You know, some of the, I mean, the Frank Trejos, I mean, the Bill Superfoot Wallaces, the Joe Lewis's, these are all my coaches and mentors. Being in the company of Ed Parker, being in the company of Master Condi, knowing people like Leroy Taylor, who was a PK world champion. I mean, I can go on and on saying, man, I had just been gifted by meeting so many good people, Joe Corley and the PKA organization and just so forth and so on. And, you know, I've been out to Texas a few times. I've met Rick Fowler a few times in passing, and he's come to a few of my events. Of course, I even had Larry Tatum and many, many other people come to my event. And I still promote events here in South Florida. So it's as long as I have a breath of energy, I'm going to continue sharing an open door policy for people to come and enjoy.
I like that.
Yeah, love to have you.
So you mentioned that you transitioned from point fighting to kickboxing. How did that kind of come about?
Well, they started what's called Condi's Lightnings in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And most of the guys on my team were all amateur boxers or pro boxers. And they wanted to start a league in our area. And I was asked by one of my senior instructors, Miguel De Jesus. He said, let's get Sean. He's got good hands. Let's add him to the team. So I was part of the original Condi Lightning. We had three generations. I was part of the original generation of the Condi Lightning fighting team. We did very well. We made a name for ourselves. We were known as a tough school, inner city, you know, and every single one of them were just class acts. And, you know, it was my safe place. It was the place when I had a terrible upbringing with challenges at home. And I had a choice, either become a part of the problem as a issue of the street, or I can go and get discipline and find myself going to a martial arts school where my extended family and brothers adopted me and protected me. And I enjoyed the discipline of what it gave me. And here I am today, from a hobby to later on became a career.
Very nice. Very nice. Excuse me there. I just lost my thought and I'm going to try and get it back here. Let's see. So has Kenpo just been your only style, or have you gotten?
No, actually I have black belts in four systems. I'm also a fifth degree under Joe Lewis's fighting arts system, which is basically, he changed the name, but it was Joe Lewis's system. I'm also under Bill Superfoot Wallace's organization. I received my third degree under Master Condi's Oriental Defensive Arts. And I'm currently a ninth under Ed Parker's system. And my senior teachers are a senior black belt instructor. We call him senior black belt teacher, per se, is the title we give, is Michael Robert Pick. And then Reiner Schulte. And these are my mentors. So even at 62 years old, I'm still under construction with people that will allow my time to reach out to them and just say, hey, how did you deal with this? Or what about the system? And what about the history? What about these people? You know, or just having, you know, what I call my uncles, my big brothers. Kenpo is a science, and I've invested my life into it. And to me, it's one of those things that you can never stop learning. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal art. And so are the people that are all over the world. We have a huge, huge, big, big family.
Indeed, indeed. So over the years of your training, there's maybe something that you've seen, you know, with the changes with kind of the popularity of MMA, what kind of changes have you seen, or maybe that you would like to see?
MMA is the new entertainment because nobody wants to pay extra money and see Mike Tyson bite someone's ear.
Exactly.
You know, so MMA is the marketing. And, you know, at the end of the day, everybody says what changes of this or evolving of that. And, you know, every discipline, humble yourself, number one. If it happens to increase knowledge and give you what you're looking for, add it to your toolbox. You know, at the end of the day, 10 years from now, you'll have the same two hands and the same two feet. So the only thing that's going to change is how you think. So how you prepare for whatever it is you're looking for. See, today I'm more about health and wellness and finding some peace in my life. Now, I got a background in personal protection and security, but that's because I went from the ideal to the real deal, as Frank Trail used to tell us. You know, and being a bouncer and dealing with that kind of element of need when needed. You know, you try to find where your balance is. I've known people that have, I'll call it, beat themselves out of the system because they don't understand the injuries are permanent.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you don't take care of your health and wellness, you're gone tomorrow. We lost a lot of great leaders because of, I shouldn't say it like that, good martial humans that weren't really good leaders. They weren't good leaders. And they had challenges with communicating and they didn't have a mentor in their life. They thought they knew it all. And at the end of the day, we lost them. We lost them to sickness. We lost them to bad health. We lost them to bad upbringing, you know, as maybe young adults or children. And, you know, let it be addictions, let it be alcohol, let it be, you know, other things. And, you know, that mental health is a huge issue today. And martial arts should be a point where you can stay in it for the rest of your life and use it more for taking care of yourself and protect those that can't and be in service to those that may need you. That's one of the reasons why I got into the professional coaching side is I wanted to use my art of knowledge and research to encourage people even to come back. And, you know, anything after three people is called politics. You know, that goes, you know, and everybody's a computer warrior. So they'll make fun of things that they see and don't understand. Or in some cases, rank seems to be the number one problem we have. It's easier to get a 10th degree than it is a first degree. I'd rather congratulate people like you. And talk more about the Q ranks coming up, you know, the under ranks.
Yeah.
Not about my accolades. It's not about me. It's really about you guys. So my direction now is to be I prefer coach versus Master Sean Kelly, even though that's my title in the art. I just don't think I've mastered everything. There's still something I'm still trying to master personally. So when I find that to be in my balance in life, maybe. Right now it is what it is, and I don't need that title. I'd rather have your friendship. I'd rather have a trust. I'd rather build a relationship. That's most important over anything else is relationships to me. And I have international and global relationships. And because of what I have done and have traveled and have invested, that's what I now give. Because quite honestly, what we see out in the world of cyberspace is bad, Kempo. It's not very good. The basics need to be talked about. And this is what happens when people don't go to an instructor. They learn by video or they YouTube it. They don't build one-on-one. Let's stand next to your instructor and let them correct your feet, bend your knees, show where your hip alignment needs to be. If we're an art of physics and body mechanics, you don't hear too much of that being talked about. Instead, it's like, how fast can you go? I just had this conversation with someone who saw this move that they're watching to learn by YouTubing it. And I said, well, did you watch what they did wrong?
Yeah.
See, because sound, speed, I mean, people flutter like a butterfly and they think that's an effect of art. Well, look at the guy they're working with, the Uki, and look how he's still standing. And the other person just did 59 moves of flutter, space, with no engagement, no depth zone. You know, if I sit there and learn a technique called shielding hammer and I block you and hit you across your face, I don't think I need 29 more moves.
Exactly.
You know, so be sound on your basics. Now, I do understand why we do these moves though for continuation. And that is a discussion in itself. You know, it's like if you're a police officer, I'm sure you're not going to go on duty with only three bullets.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah,
that's, you know, over the years talking to people that have had to use their Kempo in a real life situation, you know, all of them have said, you know, yeah, I've never gotten past, you know, the first or second move in any technique that I've used.
But well, there's
really
actually
glad to have all of those tools to be able to utilize them if they needed them.
There's actually a scientific reasoning behind all that, and it has to do with mental absence of space. Because we try to overload you with a sequential amount of flurry of movement, because anytime you come to a pause in battle, you then have a takeover thought process of worry and someone can conquer you or, my gosh, what should I do? Tachypsyche effect, it's called. So we use almost like a firearms expert. You do double tap and then you survey your work. You do what your eyes tell you. That's why the boxing, that's why the kickboxing, that's why the point karate, all and anytime you're going and you're doing touch to somebody else and you're, like Joe Lewis said, he wasn't impressed by what you can give him in sparring. He was more impressed with what you could take from him based on the fact, were you in condition to absorb and not be only the one given out? It's a two-way street. So a lot of his mental and emotional training, and if you knew Ed Parker well enough being a street fighter and also a background in psychology and sociology, he trained you to understand the Polynesian and the Oriental culture, and that is to train the body to be so physically capable and mentally able that you now understand what's called self-restraint. The more you know, the less you show.
Exactly, exactly. Very, very good. Very nice. So jumping over to, is there any, I mean, I'm sure you have plenty, but is there a, you know, another time with Ed Parker that kind of stands out to you that you maybe want to share?
Well, I mean, I had so many times with Ed Parker and he would call us up when I was working for Mr. Condi he would call by phone. And he was always telling jokes. He was the most fun guy to be around. And by the way, when you saw Ed Parker, in other words, if I were to see him in 5 minutes, the first thing he would do is embrace you. He would hug you and always telling jokes, always connecting to the audience, and he would volunteer his time to go to tournaments and referee. I mean, I remember one time visiting in Florida here in 82, we were up together on the East Coast. And he says, hey, I'm going to be down in Miami at a tournament by, I don't know if you've ever heard of a company called Macho, but it was a sparring. So Ma is the wife, Cho was the husband. They were promoting a tournament. And Mr. Parker was one of the guests coming in for the event. So anyways, he had told me that he was going to be there and I should meet up with him. And so I did. And that was super cool.
So kind of going back to a little bit of a previous question,
answer your question though about you were asking me about Ed Parker? I mean, trying to get at, I'm sorry, that it was that he invited me to come down and meet with him in Florida. And that was my quick note of just telling you his personality. He never took it as, well, if I'm there, then we'll meet up. But he invited me. He was known for that. If he would travel, he would tell people that he knew that might be in that particular area. Because I told him I was going to be in Florida visiting my father. And he's like, well, I'm going to be there too. So that was just my way of saying that he was a real guy. I mean, he was very humble, very kind, and just fun to be around.
Gotcha. So is there things that you did training-wise previous that maybe aren't being done now that maybe you'd like to see come back and kind of vice versa? Are there things that are happening now training wise that you kind of wish you had, you know, when you were training previously?
The only thing I could recommend is qualified instructor time. What does that mean? That means giving the students more opportunity to train with people that are good facilitators and coaches. And go to the event, like spend a weekend and go over basic fundamentals and break down the techniques, break down the forms. Because Ed Parker was adamant about learning the American Kempo system where you knew why and the how of each thing that you did, not just mimic the motion or just copycat it. He had a very structured blueprint, how he wanted certain things to be understood. And another part is, you know, we have like 154 plus techniques, and everybody sometimes has a tendency to think that means all 154 of those techniques are doable. And that's not the case. His topic when he taught a lot of was called variable expansion. And he would show you these variables against master key techniques and go on these expanded ideas. Formulation was really his best place where he would want people to say, okay, take this particular move, come to this point with it, like an intersection, and then what if this would happen? How would you deal with it? given you the freedom to express. Mm-hmm. And then like Frank Trail and Mike Pick, those are two classic people I can think of. And something I picked up from all of them was Ed Parker had this electric energy burst of energy. He was known to go from 0 to 100 like quick. Mm-hmm. So it was an energy, an internal ability to go into what's called the energy burst of being able to just go from a relaxed state of mind to a mind of combativeness. And a lot of this, Paul Mills was really good at doing those drills and those speed hand gesturing drills, body drills. And if you want to better your Kenpo, what is it that you're trying to better? Let it be timing? Let it be your legs? Let it be your hands? Let it be a boxing fusion? Let it be, you know, mass attack? I mean, there's so many factors here versus just, you know, having someone throw a punch and you demonstrate all over them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's kind of head towards some of my kind of little fun questions here as we go towards closing. First one being, do you have a favorite technique or a couple of favorite techniques?
Not really.
I know it's hard.
Quite honestly, it depends on the attacking situation. I've gotten to the point now I can position, recognize situations at any point. So I right now, even with my advanced students, we're working a lot of footwork, advanced mm-hmm. footwork. Because that was one of the key factors that anybody who's done fighting knows that footwork is a primary factor instead of trying to go and be flat-footed when you're dealing with the depth zone plane, which is horizontal. And if you're going to employ body mechanics, you should know how to use all three planes in movement.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not any particular technique because, you know, everybody yells out their favorite technique, but at the end of the day, you'd be surprised. They're all related anyways.
Yeah, true. Very true. Okay. You mentioned before that you weren't really a forms guy, but do you have a favorite form or set?
Form six.
Very nice. Very nice.
I like form six. I like them all because I can better understand how they're related to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So if I said to you, hey, Reggie, do you know what form do you know up to?
In the Ed Parker version, I guess my last one was coordination set two, but I originally studied, you know, started in essentially a Tracy system. So I guess book set would be the last form. I did start on staff set, but.
Okay. So with the forms, I mean, not the sets, but the forms themselves, what number?
Well, I would say long three was...
Okay, was so last. You know the forms three.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What's the theme?
Good question. I wouldn't know how to answer that.
Okay, so what do you know that you can look at internally about, let's say, short form three or long form three? What do they seem to have in common?
I guess we'd need to kind of break down the techniques that make up the form.
Let me give you an example. You know, at the end of long form two, correct?
Yes.
You know how you go inward elbow, outward elbow, drop your arms and go back up and down and then you close?
Yes.
All elbows, correct?
Yeah, correct.
Okay, well, that's called a signpost. That means stay tuned for upcoming attraction. Something's going to be standing out. Okay?
Gotcha.
So what form comes after that form? Short three? Yes,
short three.
What stands out in short form three that with all the techniques you do, there's something every technique stands out in doing in that form? Elbows.
Okay.
Crashing wings, elbows. Twirling wings, elbows. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
So if I did this to you with my elbow drop, I'm showing you at the end of long two, that isolated position of motion and movement is telling you, stay tuned for upcoming attractions. There's something's going to stand out, and it's to do with the elbows.
Okay.
So there's where the forms tell you a story and features of things that are standing out in the form you're doing, or pay attention on things that are up and coming.
Gotcha.
Okay. You know short three and you know long four?
Not yet.
Okay.
Haven't got long four yet.
When you get to long four, the first move of long four, look how it parallels the first move in short three.
Yeah,
that'll give you something to look at.
Yeah, I am.
Maybe your friend Wally
with that. I am familiar with that. So yeah, we'll definitely have to take a deeper look at that. So the next question here, if there was anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would you like to be able to train with?
I still have a passion for, I wish I could have at least met Bruce Lee, but I didn't have that opportunity. I know George Dillman was working with him because of the nunchuck, but I Mike Pick, senior teaching black belt, Michael Robert Pick is just a very unique man, and he's still alive. We conversate often, but I just find him to be one of the most unique human beings I've ever met as a mentor and someone who just guides me. And he's kind of like taking the place because we don't have a Mr. Parker anymore. And that's what's missing in the world today is that the person, you know, the captain of the ship. They used to call Ed Parker the old man. We don't have an old man, but he's my old man. So when it comes to if there's any to answer your question, I'm going to leave it as Mike Pick is my guy to go to. And because he is living, he'll always be that guy to go to. Him and Reiner Schulte have been my two pillars in life that keep me in balance as my seniors. And because they both had a relationship far greater than I ever had because they were with him in the 50s and 60s, you know, up until his passing. I was part of the last generation to be with Ed Parker in 1990 is when he left us. But to me, I just have a mutual respect for them as they do for me. And so I tell people all the time, whoever your teachers are, keep it going, keep their names out there, keep their legacies, you know, known and spoken about. And you know, you may learn from different people, different things, but don't ever forget where you come from.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. So then my last question here, since Ed Parker was very much a fan of humor and jokes and whatnot.
Yeah.
I'm curious, do you have a joke you want to take us out with?
Well, he was known to tell jokes everybody picked up on, but I thought what was funny was he was teaching us about the importance of understanding how to learn a second language. You never know when you need that second language. Mm-hmm. So he spoke to the audience about the importance of learning a second language like Kenpo. It's like a language. You got to learn it. Mm-hmm. And he said there was a story where this mouse, this baby mouse, and I may not be telling it accurately, but you'll get the point, was faced against this huge, like an elephant. Okay. And what happened is the elephant came up on the mouse and was just looking down at the mouse, and he was going to do what it normally would probably do is pounce on it, step on it, whatever, pick it up and throw it. And that mouse happened to look up at this elephant. So already we have that size difference, right? It's that Davy and Goliath kind of situation. And Ed Parker was saying, when you learn a language, keep it to yourself until it's time to bring out the ultimate of surprise and use diversions. And so we asked him, what do you mean by that? He says, well, with back to the elephant and the mouse, he said, when the elephant looked down at the mouse and just prior to picking it up or stepping on it, pretty much it's one of those deals like, what are you going to do now? And as he leaned down with his long nose, the mouse looked up and went. And the elephant got startled and left. So what happened is the mouse decided to bark like a dog and startled what was about to happen and said, you never know what someone else knows. So every little trick counts. That's the analogy. It may not be the accurate story, but it's one of those stories in the content of delivery. You get it. So in the martial arts, you never know what you're dealing with. So be careful who you're up against because yes, size matters, but you'd be surprised what someone else knows that you're not prepared for until it happens.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah, and to close that idea, Ed Parker made a comment. I was having a dialogue with someone recently about the gun techniques. You know, are they're outdated or the knife techniques. And I said, those are learning principles. They're not anything else but the old, what we call the stick-em-up moves. It's the principle about dealing with a firearm if you had a chance. And I tell people all the time, I'm not teaching you how to deal with a gun. That's on you. I'm a liability and negligence, even on an instructor teaching that to a student. The point is this, Ed Parker said this to us and to many others. He said, I'm not afraid of a gun. Never have been, never will be. It's that damn bullet that frightens me.
Yeah.
So you know, some a gun from yesteryears is a gun, and they all have bullets. So guess what? I don't care what decade and era, a gun has bullets. No matter how they come at you, they all hurt.
Yep.
A 22 can still kill you. Okay, at the end of the day.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So be aware of your surroundings.
Right on. All right. Well, I thank you so much for being on with me and telling your story. And I love hearing the stories and you know, just hearing about how, you know, how your journey has been. So,
you know, I was told that we are all links of the same chain, just a big chain. Mm-hmm. And whatever the story is, and you know, nothing for nothing, you know, Ed Parker actually taught very little because he was so busy with his schedule. Mm-hmm. So if you got a time with Ed Parker, let it be 15 minutes or a few minutes on a telephone or a seminar, which is really what he was best known because he was all over the world. Today, I would tell people this, train as often as you can with the instructors that are available to you, or even if they're, you've never heard about them and you get that first time opportunity, and do not allow someone else to tell you not to do this or not to do that because they had a bad experience. Because we're at the point in time where we're losing those legends and those mm-hmm. icons. Yeah. And we really need to groom the next generation to fulfill carrying the torch and promote our art and promote events and seminars and events where we can all gather and share some of that information that maybe many others didn't get. Let it be that you didn't get an understanding of a principle in a move or an understanding of this form or set or whatever it may be. There's enough knowledge out there that whatever questions you have, they can be answered.
Excellent. Excellent. All right. So just the last thing here, this is their time for shameless self-promotion. So if there's anything that you want to bring up or now is your time to throw that.
Well, actually, the only thing I can say is, Reggie, thank you for giving me this time. And I know you're just beginning in the podcast world, but you know something? It's these documentations and the ones to come are how the generations now and in the future will know about the, let it be me, that Sean Kelly and all the other people that can tell a story or two that I'm happy to share because I was just a lucky kid being at the right place at the right time. And guess what? You're now that lucky kid. You get to be at the right place at the right time and say, man, I remember I was interviewing Sean Kelly and we talked about Ed Parker and Joe Louis and Bill Wallace and Michael Robert Pick and names I only heard about. Maybe there'll be a time and I can either interview some of them or get to know most of them. And yeah. Good luck with that, my friend. And I salute you for your journey and many blessings to you.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I will be in touch when I'm get this put out and posted. And just once again, I can't thank you enough for being on. And you have a great day, evening, and we'll talk again soon.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.